This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Yo, welcome everybody to another edition of the Ticket City Podcast. 1-800 sold out. They will eventually have tickets for sale to sporting events. It's going to happen, I think, eventually. So remember that whenever it's time to buy tickets again, 1-800 sold out. You can obviously reach out to Chris at Ticket City through direct messaging. Email him Chris at Ticket City once there's a reason to be into that ticket buying mode again. Joining me today, I say as is always the case. It's not always the case, but it is the preferred case. Alex Onward, Dustin Jason, the entire Orange Bloods ensemble. Fellas, there is a very specific topic that I wanted to jump into today. I wanted to give a kudos to and a bit of a plug. Go to theyak.com, check out Dustin McComas's one-on-one conversation with Max Olson from The Athletic. Max is a great dude. Everybody, I think, is super familiar with Max. He's been in the market for a long time. I think Onward's had him on his podcast before. Anyway, they had a great conversation that you can listen to for free over on the Yak, which, by the way, download the free Yak app on your iPhone. It's free. You can listen to all the shows right then and there. It's a pretty badass app as far as podcast apps go. They did a conversation talking about 2020 Texas football. Max wrote an article talking about kind of the significance of this season inside the program. And it's kind of where my head is at in terms of thinking this week about where we are with the state of 2020 football. We did a coronavirus podcast a week ago. This will have shades of that, but like, I don't want us to do an hour of coronavirus. And I kind of get the feeling that other people would like to have a bit of a different conversation to be had. Fellas, the thing that's been in my head is the importance of this 2020 football season. It is a year where Tom Herman enters year four, right? So this is before he would have ever have been hired, any coach, we would have said year four, by God, if you're at Texas, you better start doing something by year four.
Yeah.
But this includes a year four where your record-setting senior quarterback enters his last season. So there is an extra amount of pressure to take advantage of, you know, just Oklahoma had it a year ago. You get 1 year of Jalen Hurts and you get one season out of that senior and you better make the most out of it. And now Texas is down to one season of eligibility for Sam Ellinger. But Sam Cosmi is a guy that a lot of people are expecting to be a first-round draft pick candidate. So I think even though there's lots of eligibility there with Cosmi, this feels like a final season for him. In fact, I think a case could be made that if there were no college football season at all and the NFL still went ahead with its draft in April and that they just did their thing because they're the NFL, you could make a case that Cosmi could go to the pros potentially without ever playing another college game again. I don't know. Like, these are weird dynamics that we're in. Joseph Asai is another guy that there's this feeling that if he has the type of season this year that he's certainly capable of, if he takes the bowl game and transitions it into this entire season, that he could be a guy that leaves early. Brennan Eagles, Texas has Caden Stearns. There's a number of players from that 2018 recruiting class that enter their third seasons. And in theory, if they had big years, you could talk about them as potentially being pro candidates. So I think this is year four for Herman. This is a year where his first full recruiting class is entering its upper class years. And there are some good players in that group that have pro potential. You think about next year and the fact that there will be at a minimum some turnover at some pretty key positions. So next year, I don't know if you can call something a reloading year when they haven't loaded yet. Like, they still are waiting to do something that's worthy of saying reload instead of rebuild. And, oh, by the way, one of the conversations, Jason, that we'll mix inside of this big conversation that we can have today about how important this year really is. And like, this, I think more than anybody in college football, certainly more than anybody in the Big 12, this is a bigger year for Texas than almost anybody else, because it's also needed in recruiting. Texas needs a 2020 season to try to build the type of momentum with elite prospects in the 2021 class, the in-state guys. You know, we've talked about the Brockermeyers and the Wheatons and the players like that who are very interested in Texas. But that Texas has to show them that all of the talk about them being a championship program under Tom Herman is something more than talk. They need it in recruiting. They need to take advantage of senior quarterback play. Like, all of this adds up to a really important season, a season that is in limbo at this point. And it being in limbo makes Texas weirdly more in limbo, I just think, than most programs. And here we are. This is the conversation that I think that we have today, is like really outlining this season. One way or the other, this thing has to be played. This is just really critical for Tom Herman in Texas.
Well, I'm not quite sure what the question is. So
I don't either. Like, we're just just an acknowledgement of the weight of what the next 4 months, if there was no coronavirus, would be for this football program, the importance. And then there's that acknowledgement that this is already was huge, and now we just have all of these complications about whether or not it's going to start on time. Are there going to be non-conference? You know, all of this stuff exists in a weird way that puts one of the most important seasons of Texas football, I think, in a long time. And I don't think you can.
But what quantifies important season to you? In
I think when you have a senior quarterback who you are talking about being in the category of Mount Rushmore quarterbacks in the history of your school. When you have a guy like that and he's in his senior year, that season typically is more important. The last season of any eligibility you know you're going to have with a great quarterback carries more weight of significance than the season that follows it, because there is this feeling that you have to do something. You have to strike while the iron is hot, because you don't ever know fully when the iron gets hot again. It's probably been since 2009 that anybody would feel this way about a Texas season, because it's been since Colt McCoy graduated that there has been a quarterback good enough that you would say, oh man, like, we better be good this year, because on paper, you're losing one of the five or six best quarterbacks in school history. The guy that automatically replaces him with zero experience probably isn't that guy yet. So Sam Ellinger alone being a senior, without everything else even beginning to take into the equation, his presence as this being his final season, I think, adds pressure to this season.
Well, I mean, I say yay and nay, right? So I agree. First of all, I will say that there's pressure every year at Texas. So I don't know if this year ends up being any different than most. You know, I would say, sure, it's important, but there's almost an asterisk on the season, to be quite honest with you. And I hear what you're saying, but when you go in, if it's just Sam and all things were equal, I would say yes. But when you start factoring in all the other outlying things that they cannot control, when we're talking about the COVID, not having spring practice, but, you know, barely being on the field, you know, and now it's trying to get into some things right now and then seeing what happens going forward. You add in, you know, the seven new coaches that, you know, that are here. Like, there's so many and again, that's controllable, right? Because that's a Tom Herman thing. So some things you are outside of control. Some things are within his control. But you also know that they also gave a lot of these coordinators 3-year deals. They've given them, those guys, kind of a cushion. Tom Herman has clearly a cushion. You know, we're talking about, athletic department that's going to not have as much revenue coming in. So that's where when I asked you about like the importance and the things that you're talking about, like,
I'm not talking about job security so much, because all of those things, you're right. This is a weird season. And so it's not about like Herman losing a job. It's about in actual theory, not or beyond theory. again, there are certain years that you look at and you go, man, we're going to be really good in this season because we've had a young quarterback and now he's going to be a junior or a senior. So there are years that you start bookmarking on the calendars. I promise you, Texas football fans are looking at 2021, and without 2020 even being played, they realize, okay, well, that it's a bit of a rebuild of some degree because the quarterback that's been starting for the last 3.5+ seasons is gone. So 2021, before you ever play 2020, I think there's an acknowledgement from smart Texas fans that 2020 is the end of a small era. And then the next era, even if it's inside of the Tom Herman era, it begins next season. So it just, this season is the culmination of the Sam Ellinger era. And so there's just extra weight. There's an importance
the era,
to take
the
advantage
era,
of that.
The era, this is where I'll say my thing and I'll let someone else jump in. I hear what you're saying, but I guess what I'm saying too, Ketch, is I hear Sam Ellinger, right? And we're talking about, and you talk about him being on the Mount Rushmore, but let's talk about what's around him. And we go to receivers and we go to a group that's pretty much still, for the most part, unproven. And I'm not having a Brandon Eagles debate today, but let's just say that you still have got, you don't have a 1,000-yard receiver coming back. You don't have anyone that's even close to that coming back. So there's still some work to be done there. You still had a tight end room that, you know, Cade Brewer was still hurt for a portion of last year. So there's still some things to be seen as far as that is concerned. Keontae Ingram has shown some promise. He's not a 1,000-yard running back yet. So we still got to see what happens with him. There's still some question marks as far as the offensive line and who's going to start, or is there a Tope or Mate that's going to start, or what else? And I'm sure Alex has his opinions as far as that is concerned. We still have a group of defensive linemen that are, for the most part, unproven. We have linebackers that are unproven. We have DBs that, sure, look great on paper. This still was a unit that struggled last year, and this is still one of the worst defenses in the country last year, ranked well over 100. And so I hear what you're saying, but I also will just go back to there's still a lot of question marks where while you can say it's an important season, I still say there's still a lot to be proven, and I can't look at it like a do or die kind of year where I'm looking at this team and I'm like, I got more question marks than I have answers. That's all.
But didn't Tom Herman himself say, hey, this was the year they're pointing to? They always pointed to this year.
Yeah, that's something
to get them over the hump. So, yeah. I mean, he kind of put that on himself a little bit. Hey, Anwar, to be clear, I do agree with you. There are a lot of unanswered questions on this team, but Herman kind of put that on himself when he said, hey, this is the year they've pointed to. And I get it. If that's true, if that's how he truly feels, I understand, Ketch, where you're coming from. I mean, listen, I mean, you've got to strike while the iron's hot. It would have been like Oklahoma last year or the year before when Kyler Murray was a senior, having that season suspended as opposed to this season with an inexperienced quarterback. No, you'd rather have a season suspended where you don't have experience at quarterback and you don't think, hey, we've got a chance to really – you know, win a championship and get this thing back on track, not to mention, you know, recruiting and new coaches and things that need to get experience in the program. So I see both sides of it. I agree with Anwar. I don't know that this season's going to be as dynamic as maybe some people seem to think, as my landline rings, which never
phone's
happens.
Ringing, dude.
Yeah, like I'm one of the few who still has a landline.
He's got a rotary phone.
I mean, people that are so confident, hey, this is going to be a 10-11 win season, I'm not quite there. I think if the right pieces come together, it could be. But I do think this is a big season, much bigger for Texas to have this season than it is for, say, Oklahoma, who's coming off umpteen championships in a row, who's breaking in a young quarterback. You know,
Lincoln
might take
Riley's
a step.
Like, hey, we can play in the spring.
Yeah, I mean, listen, most people are thinking Oklahoma might take a slight step back. Granted, they're still picked to win the conference, but take a slight step back. Whereas Texas, this is supposed to be the year that Texas takes a step forward. So to me, this is a bigger year for Texas to have a football season than it is for Oklahoma. Oklahoma State's expecting to take a step forward. So I think you could argue that it's a big year for Oklahoma State as well. But I think with Texas having a senior quarterback, the kind of the recruits that you mentioned, Ketch, that are watching this thing, I think it is a bigger year for Texas than certainly any school in the Big 12. And you know, I'm not going to go to every school in the country. Maybe USC would be up there as well, but I think it's probably as big a year for Texas potentially as it is most schools in the country.
Well, I think, you know, Jason, both you and Alwar are kind of making Ketch's point by raising some of the questions and stuff like that is, you know, and let's put this in the context of discussing it from like a normal type of season. You know, there's 12 games, you've had the buildup and that sort of thing. Is there's all these questions still in the program and it's year four. Like if it's not going to happen now with, you know, with Ellinger and, you know, your 2018 recruiting class is in its third year, those guys are getting older. You've got some, you know, you've got an offensive lineman that's an NFL guy. You've got a pass rusher that's going to be an NFL guy. If it doesn't happen now, when is it going to happen? And that's easier said under a normal scenario, to where if you know, if we get to the point where it's a conference only schedule, or, you know, the workouts or in practices are kind of limited, then I think you absolutely have to add, you know, an asterisk or some context to the season. Like, hey, this is a very unusual situation. It's not as easy as it would be under normal circumstances to judge the progress of the program. But, you know, heading to the year four, like the fact that there are still those questions, it's why this year is so important, because it's time to show it. It's time to prove for Tom Herman that he is the guy at Texas. And I know his job security is one thing, but just to prove that the level of this program is going up long term, because this is something Max and I talked about yesterday. I mean, according to him, Chris Del Conte basically just said, hey, you only get to like fire and hire people once. And we know that's generally the case of how it works in big time college football. You only get to use that card one time before it's like, okay, big guy, now it's on you. So it's going to be, I think, if there's not a normal season, and that likelihood seems, you know, pretty high that it's just not going to be a normal type season, it's going to be difficult to truly assess and evaluate any college football team, and maybe especially Texas, given they have basically an entire new coaching staff. But year four is so critical for Herman, not just because he's circled this for some time. He's kind of beat around the bush in years past, and now he's not really afraid to even say it at all. This has been the year they've been building towards because of Ellinger, because that 2018 class is older, and so on and so forth. If it doesn't happen now, you'd have to ask yourself, when is it going to happen? And I think that's why it's so important.
Alex, I want to bring you in here because I want to ask you a series of quick little questions with yes or no answers, and then it leads to like the bigger question of that I'm going to toss your way. Sam Cosmi, you expect him to be in the NFL draft whenever there is an NFL draft in 2021?
I think I kind of do. I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I lean towards yes.
Your gut on Joseph Osai, like I wouldn't even ask you.
Leaning towards yes.
Leaning towards yes. So my question is, when we look ahead to 2021, and Anwar is so right, like there's no disagreement with anybody on this podcast with Anwar about this being a team with a million question marks. But when we look at 2021, what do we think about a team, this Texas team, if we're looking at a season where next year we know that Sam, both Sam's and Joseph Osai, which kind of represent the three best players on the team, if they all leave, which is realistic, right? Sam's gone for sure after the next season, and then your two best players beyond him are both draft eligible, and depending on how well they play, if they stay healthy, whatever, like you and I both tend to think the same thing. Like it would make sense that they would go into the next NFL draft. 2021 suddenly is a UT football program that doesn't have those three players on this team. And in addition to all of the other questions that Anwar is bringing up that would still potentially need to be answered in some shape, form, or fashion, filling those three voids inside this program right now is pretty difficult. There isn't a proven quarterback. There are great candidates to fill Sam Cosmi's shoes, but there's not an obvious one that you can – you automatically think that there's a baton that will be handed over from one player to the next. And the same thing's certainly true of Joseph Osai. There's nobody else in the program that you feel like there's a baton that could be handed off and say, well, we go from the Osai era to this guy's era. So you know, when that whole strike while the iron's hot, like my head is these three guys actually have the potential to be all monsters this season. Like if you have that, if you've got nuclear weapons at certain positions, and maybe that's not fair to call Sam Ellinger a nuclear weapon just yet, but like people think he can be, like, man, you better win games when those three guys exist, because replacing three players like that all at one time in a program that hasn't been very consistent for the last decade, it looms ominously for me. Like, I think those three dudes leaving changes this program in transitioning from whatever the next season is to the one that follows thereafter.
Well, I guess I'll just say, you know, I'll say it like this. We didn't know we were coming into the Joseph Ossai era until we came into it, right? And it's not like it's been a long era. It's actually been something where we're kind of betting on the come that that we'll get the heyday of this era as we look back at it here in his upcoming junior season, right? I mean, it's not like he's been that guy. That
he was not an all-conference player a year ago.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like I do think that what we all saw last year out of him and, you know, coming down the stretch and how we can project him with what he's, you know, reportedly what he's done with his body behind the scenes and what we've seen like on social media and stuff like that, what he's done with his body. He's looking like he's going to be a real problem. So that was my reasoning for saying that. I kind of lean towards him going pro. Also, it feels like just things are weird right now in college football. I feel like if I was playing college football, I might be ready to get out after this year if I had a chance. So what I'm saying is it isn't out of the ordinary for somebody to step up, maybe a little bit out of the blue, or like, who knows? We could be talking this time next year about how excited we are about Prince Dorba coming into his second year after, you know, I mean, like the Prince Dorba era could start this year, you know, the Byron Vaughns, like who really knows? What's Reese Leto could move over there and
make. But Alex, wouldn't you say the three most important positions on the field are quarterback, left tackle, pass rusher, right? I mean, and we could corner. Argue corner, right? Yeah. But I mean, those would be the four Mount Rushmore positions.
Yeah,
right?
No, I get it. Yeah, I get it. I'm just saying specifically in relation to the Jack position, the Joseph Ossai era is not, I don't consider it like the Sam Ellinger era. Those two things seem different to me because one is the most important position where you've had a guy that's been at least a sturdy hand there and a nationally known name, you know, for basically the duration of his career. Right. I think it's a little bit tougher at left tackle too, because if Cosme does leave, you know, you got guys like Reese Moore, you know, who wasn't ready but has, you know, good upside. You have guys like Isaiah Hookfin, who's sort of the same. Christian Jones, he's going to need to play right tackle. Tyler Johnson might get some run this year at guard, but certainly has the versatility to play tackle. He could maybe be a candidate to bump out if he has a good season at guard, and they could backfill his position inside with maybe one of these newer players like, you know, a Jake Majors or a Logan Parr after they get a year under their belt. We could see a guy like Andre Carrick come in here and you know, be one of these dudes that was like a Cosme that comes in and takes a redshirt year, and then as a redshirt freshman comes in and is a stud. There are a million things that could happen kind of like that, but I think it's, you know, if I were rating, you know, the losses there, you know, at those three, as you mentioned, Ketch, the three very important positions, the Mount Rushmore. I would say if there's a Mount Rushmore where it's four of them, you have those three in corner, and that's basically indisputable by anybody who's a close observer of football. I'd say that the most important is Ellinger. That era shifting out would be Ellinger. The second most important would be Cosme. And I feel like the third most important would be Joseph Ossai.
Let me throw this out there to everybody. Anybody want to jump on this grenade, go for it. I definitely want to hear Anwar's thoughts on this, though. We are talking about the quarterback room moving forward. And I've been at the forefront of hyperbole in saying, when you look at the quarterback recruiting of Hudson Card combined with Jaquindon Jackson combined with Jalen Milroe coming in, like those three quarterbacks combined.
That was something I didn't say, Kitch. I don't mean to interrupt you, but the other thing that I wanted to say is look at the quarterbacks coming in behind Sam. One or two of those guys might end up being better than Sam.
Well, and so here's the question, Alex. Does anybody think that in 2021 that the quarterback options that are available could – does anybody think the quarterback play in 2021, whoever the hell it might be, and Casey Thompson's in that mix as well, obviously, does anybody think that the quarterback play could actually improve from senior season Sam and whatever he is, that this next generation of quarterbacks wouldn't have a step back season? Or does anybody think there could actually be a better season of quarterback play in 2021 than 2020? And it's not completely unheard of. You think about the season that Colt McCoy had in 2009, like where I used to get into trouble with Garrett Gilbert is I would say things like, when you look at the biggest games of 2009, Colt against Nebraska, against Oklahoma, against Texas Tech, his numbers weren't very good. And I always used to think, well, Texas will get better numbers next season because they can't be worse than one touchdown pass and seven picks in the three toughest games of the season. It didn't really quite go that way. But on paper, like, you can talk yourself into saying it can get better. Can it in 2021 at quarterback?
That's tough, man, because Sam's pretty good. I don't think I can go that far. But I tell you what, I was talking to over the weekend. I talked to Brad Stanfield, the quarterback coach, who's coached – I mean, he's coached some pretty big talents and – you know, I wrote about Jalen Milroe. Well, he also coaches Hudson Card, and we're going to circle back and talk about Hudson in a few weeks. And he and I were just kind of talking off the record a little bit. And I mean, to listen to him talk about Hudson Card, dude, I mean, and he kind of has me convinced. I mean, I've been a Hudson Card fan anyways, but I mean, I think that guy, to hear Brad Stanfield describe what he sees from Hudson Card, a guy he's coached in seventh grade, I mean, he thinks he said flat out, if there's a better quarterback in the country coming out of high school in 2020, he goes, you're going to have to show it to me. I've looked at them all and he's seen them all up close, you know, at Elite 11 type stuff. And, you know, I didn't realize he was telling me, like, he teaches velocity and stuff. And Hudson's velocity, and I don't have this, I'd have to pull up the tweet, but it was like 67 miles per hour at Elite 11. The next highest was 64. That's three miles per hour is a sizable advantage over the second highest velocity thrower. But not just that. I mean, he was just saying just some of the intangibles that Hudson brings. I mean, he has me convinced, man. If Hudson Card isn't the next great Texas quarterback, then I'll be a little bit surprised. But to say, will Hudson be better in year one than Sam as a senior? That to me seems like a bit of a stretch. And some of that goes with the parts around him too. Like you mentioned, I mean, who's going to be around him? Who's going to be blocking for him? Who's going to, as Onmar mentioned with the receiver, who are they going to be throwing to? So there's different things that go into that. But to answer your question, no, I don't think I can safely say or comfortably say the quarterback play would be better the year after Sam's gone.
Well, the only reason why I say it's potentially their catch is that, you know, when you look at Sam's legacy, you know, the story that won't be told often enough is that this is a guy who's basically on his third OC in 4 years. And if we're just being quite honest with it, I mean, Tim Beck, I don't think any of us think he's better than Mike Yurcich by any stretch of the imagination. So he goes from Tim Beck to Tom Herman to Mike Yurcich. And so, even in the Tom Herman portion of it, you know, where he was the OC, I mean, you still had a Tom Herman coach who was like, hey, I'm not comfortable calling these plays from the sidelines, right? And so they had to figure out some sort of system where Tim Beck is the eyes in the skies, but he's kind of communicating it in a way that Tom Herman understands it. So therefore, it's kind of being communicated to Sam Ehlinger. And you have a guy like Hudson Carr who – essentially, all he's had to do was learn from Yurcich here in year one. Like, that's all he's been able to do. And meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting, he'll be able to learn from Yurcich, you know, obviously this upcoming season on the sidelines, and then going into next year. So I just think having a guy like Yurcich probably benefits a guy like Hudson Card. Now, I do agree with what Jason's saying, like, on the natural surface, like, he's probably not going to be tremendously better, but I don't think there'll be a huge drop-off by the time Hudson gets there, just because, I mean, you got to think, like, again, Sam's first year as a freshman, he's the leading rusher on the team. It ain't like he rushed for a lot either, okay? And then, you know, the following year, he did better. Last year, he was injured and had to fight through some injuries. But I'm with you. I feel like it'd be very close catch. I feel like there's a potential for improvement, a slight improvement. And I don't mean, like, to say Sam sucks, but I just feel like I think he comes in at a better place having a better OC than Sam did.
It's an interesting, you know, one of the fascinating things about this conversation is, while I point out that, you know, the three positions where they potentially could have turnover are key ones, the rest of the roster actually, I think, looks better on paper in 2021 than it does in 2020, right? So when we talk about supporting casts, at running back, you're getting Bijan in year two, you're getting an older, you're getting Keon. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to have everybody at running back come back that they need. The receivers, what's unproven this year might be, you know, Brennan Eagles could be coming off of that type of 1,000-yard season that he's not this year, and maybe he doesn't have the kind of year that he thinks he can go pro. Although there's been weirdly, I feel like Brennan fits the profile of a guy that would go pro if he has a really good year and not necessarily a great year. But you've got Jake Smith. You've got all that receiving talent. Whittington, if he can stay healthy. You've got an offensive line that does, as Alex outlined, there are pieces. They're all unproven. But, like, you can see the makings of a tangibly good offensive line. All of that 2018 recruiting class and the secondary, the B.J. Fosters of the world, in theory, Jalen Greens. I don't know how well some of these guys would play this season, that maybe they play themselves into a pro decision to make. But, like, the roster looks really good. It's those three positions that threaten to, like, create the biggest transitional change. But Dustin, if I told you that Sam had a 165 quarterback rating as a senior, you might snap my hand off for that number, right? Like, that would be improvement. And that, would you take 165 from Sam right now if I offered it to you?
Yeah, I mean, last year he was
154,
155 ish, and I think 165, I think, would put him in, I'd say, probably borderline top 10 ish nationally.
It'd be a really good season from Sam.
Absolutely, yeah, and it would probably signal more consistency, more stuff down the field. Yeah, I think that, you know, if you're a Texas fan, you would absolutely take that. That's a definite sign of improvement.
Do you think Hudson Card's got a 165 in him in his first year as a starter, though?
No, I don't.
I think he might. But I'm with you. Like, yeah, if I had to bet money, I would,
you know,
say
and,
no.
And we kind of saw, you know, a guy in Sam Howell in North Carolina who I think that had some of those similar throwing tools. He's not the athlete that Hudson is. But he's a pretty good athlete for a quarterback, and he posted some really monster numbers in North Carolina. So it's, you know, you never quite know with these guys until they get out there and do it. Could he do it? Yes. I don't think it's, you know, it's definitely a percentage greater than zero. I just think it's very unlikely, because it's just so hard for these guys to jump in there in their first true sign of action. But you know what? If you went through a season next season and he got in there for four games and kept his red shirt, and you kind of saw some flashes, in maybe those percentages raised, but it's hard to expect that from those guys until they actually do it.
Is Card the only, because I kind of look at this as, look, Sam was in the 130s from a season quarterback rating until the final two games of the year. And the bowl game and Tech boosted his numbers so that at the end of the year, he has a 155 quarterback rating. But, like, I was reading yesterday that Jet Duffy transferred to Hampton. Does anybody else see that? He's transferred to Hampton, but Hampton's already canceled, I think, all of its fall sports. So it was this question of like, what do you do as a grad transfer quarterback if you transfer to a school that isn't planning on playing, at least so far this year? And I only bring that up because going into the Tech game, Jet Duffy and Sam had the exact same quarterback rating. Like, I think it was right in the 134 range for the season. And that was like one of the things I remember talking about was like, how did we get to a point where Jet Duffy is the same level of quarterback efficiency as Sam Ehlinger? And then he has two big games and he finishes, his numbers look a little bit different. But Sam hasn't yet been an all Big 12 quarterback either. Like Sam Cosmi has had that type of season. Sam Ehlinger and Joseph Osai have not yet been all Big 12 caliber players. Sam's gone regardless, but like part of what we're talking about hasn't yet been proven on the field. So when Anwar, when I say like, hey, does anybody think that Hudson Card could have a better first season than Sam's last season? I say that with like an acknowledgement that we've overcooked Sam a little bit because as a passer, there's just still consistency issues that going into his senior season, he still has to prove. He has to prove that there aren't the clunkers in there that he mixes in occasionally that separates really good quarterbacks from the ones that end up, you know, having numbers retired and true legacies that people talk about, you know, for 25 years or so.
Yeah. Can I just be honest with you right now?
I got a
message from a source that told me that DeMarvion Overshawn was working out with the team right now. And so I actually started typing some stuff on Twitter. So I totally blanked out to everything that you were just saying.
Fair enough.
And I want to BS it. Like, I really want to BS
it. Thank you for your full transparency.
I want to BS it and try to feel my way through it. But I'll be honest with you. I was just like, oh, I need to put this news out here.
Well, what's the news? Is that the news?
Yeah, I had yesterday that he was rejoining the team, but I just had to put, I'm just putting out there that he actually is participating in the 9 a.m. workouts.
Well, real quick, sidebar, guys, that's a big deal. Like let's do the DeMarvion Overshown. I don't even know that we're going to have this conversation, and I don't want to get into like the politics of what DeMarvion Overshown turned into. The reality is he's a really talented young man that has Sunday upside, and his entire college football career was a little bit in limbo through some personal stuff that he's been dealing with. It's gotten lost because of the stuff that he said with regards to, you know, the protesting and stuff. But like, this is a kid that Texas, I thought was on the, someone asked me, I think R. Long asked me earlier this week if I like, what did I think? And I was like, man, there may be a good chance that like, we don't hear from him again. So that he's here and able to be here and hopefully feel comfortable enough with the life situation that he's been dealing with over the course of the last few months. Is a big win for him. Like, I'm just happy for him as a human being that the story's not the opposite, that he's not coming back. And the reasons most people would never know about have nothing to do with anything that's been discussed. So I'm just happy for a human being that like everything's come together in a way where he can go focus on college football and be a college student. And for the football program, this was a big win. Like this losing that piece, that type of talent, Dustin, isn't the type of thing this program for me can afford to lose. Like they need to keep talent like that in the program. And then they need to keep it in the program long enough that it can cultivate and realize its most ambitious upside. And I think people got distracted by the comments that he made on social media and kind of forgot this is a really important kid we need to keep.
Oh, absolutely. Especially the linebacker position. Yes. You start looking at that position without DeMarvion Overshown in the mix, and it's a scary sight. I think that even with him in the mix, that's probably still the weakest position group on the roster. But yeah, it's a huge deal. I mean, I'm thinking back to how much I wrote about him in this very, very, very long and unusual offseason already. And I just, every time I kept thinking of like, you know, up and coming players or important pieces or breakout guys or whatever you want to phrase it, he was one of the guys that I thought of every single time. I just think that he's got such a unique skill set. He's super talented. And by the way, he had some really bright flashes in some moments to end last season. So I think that's a huge deal. You know, it, and also too, it kind of signals that, you know, generally speaking, these guys are on board. They're moving forward. They're kind of focusing on football and all that sort of conversation. So yeah, it's definitely a huge deal. That's a really, really talented football player, who I think that when Chris Ash envisions his offense, his defense, it's a hard time not having Overshown in the mix in that kind of hybrid role that he's had success with in the past.
Really talented. But to Anwar's point earlier, I mean, this is a guy who, he's playing a new position that I don't think he's ever played before. He's unproven. I mean, listen, I'm coming out of high school. I was as big a fan of anybody after seeing him in the Under Armour All-American game and you know, just what he put on tape. But I don't think it's safe to say that he's just going to be a plug-and-play player that's going to be a plus player for Texas. I mean, he's still – DeMarvion and a lot of other guys still have a lot to prove. So, you know,
I'd argue some of that is because of the way they were used last year too.
And he was banged up a little bit.
I don't think that DeMarvion Overshown was utilized as best as he could, and maybe that kind of goes for some of those guys as well. But yeah, I understand. I mean, many of those guys are unproven, but I think part of that unproven factor is one of the reasons why Tom Herman made a change of defensive coordinator.
I just think sometimes Texas fans, even us media, and you guys have heard it, we're too quick to anoint some of these guys. Hey, this guy's going to be tremendous before they've ever done anything on the field. Now, would it shock me if Overshown was tremendous at his new position? Not at all, but you've heard it from me before. Hey, I need to see it before I fully buy into it.
Would you like to see that position if he's not playing it?
Listen, he's a tremendous talent from a physical perspective, but that's why his importance is even higher than it would be otherwise, is because he's that position desperately needs him out there. So that certainly increases his importance.
He's been number one on Alex's depth chart all offseason, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's not a lot of competition there either. I mean,
he's also been the single most productive player on defense when he's been on the football field.
He had 18 tackles last year, man. I mean,
oh yeah, but
that's Jason, the most productive. That's
you
not
just want to look at fucking counting stats like on that. The field. Like, yeah, come on, dude. Like, I'm talking about a efficiency on a per snap basis.
Great. It's
like,
bottom line is he's still very much unproven. We can go into this. I mean, listen, we've gone through this time and time again.
I mean,
see it on the field before we're, you know, in.
He had a sack. I mean, on 231 snaps, he had two sacks, two quarterback hits. He had five tackles for a loss. Like out of those 18 tackles, five of them were tackles for a loss. He had quarterback pressures. He caused a fumble. He had a batted pass. He had three run stuffs, two pass breakups, an interception, and a blow up. He only allowed a 25% completion rate.
Pretty much all that was against what? Louisiana Tech, Kansas,
no,
Texas Tech.
I'm looking at
interception against Louisiana Tech.
No, it was against Iowa State, Baylor,
Utah, I think he Texas was in there.
Texas Tech, and Kansas he played.
Well, then the official bio that Texas has on him is wrong. It says he had an interception in the season opener versus Louisiana Tech. Five tackles came in the first career start versus Kansas.
Okay, so yeah,
two tackles, a pass breakup versus Ken. Listen, I mean, I'm not bagging on the kid. I mean, I hope he does well. Listen, I enjoyed the hell covering him as a recruit. I'm a DeMarvion Overshown fan, but I'm just saying he still had, like other guys, like the receivers, there's still a lot to prove for DeMarvion Overshown and a lot of other positions. So I don't want to anoint him as a savior of the linebacker core just yet.
I'd hate to hear what it sounded like if you were going to bag on it.
I'm just being objective, dude.
So. No, real quick, because on Overshown, I just think it's important to say two things. He falls into the category of talent that over the course of 4 years, when we look at the stats and the metrics, he falls into the tier of players that when recruited eventually emerge into NFL players at higher rates than players below him in the recruiting tier. So he's the type of talent that you hate to lose, because just on paper, his upside suggests that if he can reach it, you've got a really high caliber player. Jason's right. He's not there yet, but his profile is that he's the kind of a guy that can get there. And I would say his profile of potentially getting there is higher than anybody else at his position in the program by
a considerable margin at this point. That has a lot to do with failures of recruiting big time talent at that position at levels that would easily have us throw.
Losing Gabe Floyd didn't help either.
Exactly. The other thing is, like, this is really critical to Overshown. He comes from a tiny program in East Texas. He fits the mold of a guy that you say, that guy's going to need 3 years. And more times than not, guys don't have the patience to let themselves, they want it so fast that when it doesn't happen, they leave, they transfer, they get frustrated, they give up in school, whatever. This is a kid that shouldn't start hitting his ceiling as a player until the back half of his career, because he needs to go into a weight program and develop his body, and he needs time to kind of cook in the oven. I feel like we're at that point now where we should start to see some of that upside really play out. I don't like point the finger and say he's unproven at this point and I don't think anybody is suggesting this, but he's such a young guy that anything he hasn't done so far for me falls into the category of what I would typically expect. I would have said when he comes in, wouldn't surprise me if his talent takes him to the top of the depth chart, but he fits the profile of a guy that's going to need 3 years. And now we're getting ready to hit that third year. And I think now we're going to get a better vision of what it is that he can become. It would have sucked to have lost a Marvion Overshown before he gets to that third year and you get a chance to see what a cultivated DeMarvion Overshown looks like. Anybody else have an Overshown thought before we jump back in, wrap up conversation, jump into parting shots?
Yes. The only thing I will say, and I know this is going to be a little bit tough, but we have to hit a point, and this probably should be my parting shot, right? We've got to get a point, though, where we stop following this, or at least riding the emotional roller coaster as relates to these young men on social media. Like, the Juwan Mitchell at one point in the transfer portal, then he's not in the transfer portal. Denzel Okafor is in the transfer portal, then he's not in the transfer portal. Brendan Eagles tweets out something about his dissatisfaction, but he shows up for practice the next day. You have other players who tweet out their dissatisfaction, but as they practice Zoom meetings the next day. You had the whole thing with DeMarvion Overshown and everything that's going on there. And then here he is back in the fold. Like, at some point, I think we have to realize, like, okay, wait, these are 18-year-olds, 19-year-old, 20-year-old young men who are on social media who may not be using it the way as us old folks do, because us old folks are really intentional with the way we use social media. We post something and then we're done. But they're posting something and they post 12 things or 15 things or 17 things, and some of it's just venting in the moment. And then some of it is things that I think as older people, we have to say, okay, we're in our 40s. Or you're in your 50s, you got to say, man, those people are in their teens or they're 20. So you know what? I'm just going to give them some room and some leeway to make some mistakes, to mess up, to maybe try to formulate things or formulate their own thoughts or formulate their opinions or figure things out in life. But the one thing we have to do and kind of resist the urge of is bashing these young guys when they're doing things and figuring things out. Because ultimately what we're seeing is you're seeing a lot of venting, but you haven't seen a lot of people walking. And even Anthony Cook was kind of back and forth for a little bit as far as like what he was going to do. So I just hope as DeMarvion is there and he's working out, the next time someone sees something on social media and there's all of a sudden a freaking 7-page thread about what some guy may have hinted at or alluded at, and we're getting mods, and getting tagged like all the damn time. Like, someone just take a break and say, you know what? These young people, I don't know what the hell. Let's just let this thing play out, because that's what you and I know you do that, Ketch. I do that. Jason, you do. Dustin, we always try to say, hey, just pump the brakes. Let this thing play out. Let's just see what happens. But everyone is just so instantaneous, banging on the table and want answers and this and that. This proves, I think, going forward that, listen, anytime a young person going forward tweets out anything, We should just take a step back and let it play out, because they are prone to change their mind. Because I don't know, that's what young people do.
Amen. B, that counts as a parting shot.
Yeah, that's a really good parting shot, and I agree 100%. Like, we're seeing a society right now. Like, these guys have grown up with social media, and that's just kind of in some ways how they express themselves. Like, people just got to stop.
God, it wasn't too, around when I was a teenager.
Exactly. People just got to stop getting too high and too low with all that stuff.
No, how emotional. Think about how emotional you were when you were 19 years old.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you get caught up in a moment. Like, look, we use social media, but we're older. So we post pictures of our kids, right? Maybe we post a picture of a drink or something like that. I doubt Alex is even on social media. But the rest of us who kind of get on there occasionally, it's just for little things like that. But it's they post like they're pissed off on a you know, Monday, and then they're all hanging out with each other like Monday night. Like, it's nothing. Like, that's just – it's just a different world, and we have to just accept them for, like, that's not our world, right?
I can't count how many fist fights I got in with my best friends in college to then the next day you're best buds again. I mean,
and you don't even talk about it. You never even talk about it again. It's like,
no. And, you know, if the coaches are going to accept them back, then we got to move on. And so it's just, so anyway, that's just my, I guess technically that's my parting shot is, let them be them. That's their world. We're old people in their world, all yes. right? You got to think of it. We're old people in their world. You're saying, well, they're putting it out to the world. But yes, but take it in context. Like, I don't get mad at my two-year-old for acting like a two-year-old because he's two, right? I don't get mad at my seven-year-old for when he acts like a seven-year-old because he's seven, right? And so I can't get mad at teenagers for acting like you're going to get mad at – Jason, you get mad at your teenagers when they lie? I mean, you probably get upset.
Yeah, I do, actually.
But you understand it's part of it, right? You understand.
Then I think about the lies I told when I was there.
Yes, so. You're like, oh, God. Well, at least I know. So anyway, that's my parting shot.
It was a good parting shot. Just FYI, like it was so good. I don't think you can do better. And like, that's why me and Dustin were both like, yeah, that's a good parting shot. I think you took us into parting shots.
I didn't plan to. It just kind of happened organically.
Those are the best ones.
Yeah. That felt like an Alex rant about the homeowners association, but actually about, you know, not the homeowners association. So we're weirdly going to like it because it gave us our fill of just, it was a good stuff. I enjoyed that. Alex,
we haven't had an Alex rant in years. So that's
part of it. It feels like it's been a while.
Yeah.
So Alex, you're up.
Yeah. I'll let Anwar take the honors there. I don't have any rants in my. I don't have any rants right now that are
after all your plumbing and drywall and all that stuff. Nothing.
I don't think drywall's that hard. I really don't. It's like,
you're going to be the leader of the Orange Bloods drywall company.
Drywall. I need to be the owner of the dishwasher repair company. That thing only took me like 30 minutes. Got that thing fixed right up. Dishwashers really aren't a lot of parts. It's funny. It's so funny. You take something apart, you just look at it, you're like, are you fucking serious? This thing costed $400?
I'm not paying for that fine, by the way. Last week I was paying for fines. Yeah. I do not pay for positive washing machine story. But, yeah.
Alex, I'm curious, did you watch like a YouTube video or how did you know what to do on the dishwasher?
Watch the YouTube video. Yeah.
Dude, isn't it amazing what you can learn on YouTube how to fix? It's pretty incredible, dude.
Yeah. My son basically lives on. He loves to watch like how to build telephone pole, like an utility pole.
They have YouTube videos for that?
Oh yeah, like it's like adults get into.
You better
it.
Hope he doesn't like find his way into some 5G conspiracy theory telephone pole videos. And
his
stuff
his
like that.
New thing is to watch videos. There's like a guy, Farmer Jim or Driver Jim or something like that. And the guy drives through cities all over America and he records himself driving through the cities. It's pretty like Hendrix is all about skylines and buildings and stuff. And so it's pretty interesting to watch, but yeah, no, it's weird, but he's six. So I just let him enjoy what the hell he wants to enjoy. But like, yeah, man, I definitely don't vibe and understand it. Jason, do you have?
Oh, do you know what else I wanted to say too? Just real quick. I can't wait for this bombshell Dan Snyder bombshell to come out. This is going to be fantastic.
It feels very much 2010 offseason, Jason? That night when the hammer was going to drop. And
oh, I remember. I'll never forget that. I was at Dish Falk when you called me and we were talking about it. And because I was like, am I going to have to ask Augie about this?
And then it just never happened.
Yeah,
Anwar, you missed it. But this lawyer for there was a lawyer, I think, associated with like the Bev Kearney case or something. Somebody in that world was telling everybody in the media that before midnight, a bombshell related to all of that was going to drop. And there are hints that it was going to involve various people inside of the athletic department. And so it was one of the edgiest days and nights, because it was very similar to this. Like, it was just like this, in that there were a bunch of people saying, oh man, I'm hearing the bomb's going to drop tonight. I'm hearing that when it comes out, the foundation of UT athletics is going to change. And we were all like, man, we're hearing stuff, but like, we're not, like, nobody ever took the bait and said out loud what they were hearing behind the scenes, which is ultimately what the people behind the scenes, the lawyers involved, they wanted that to get out without, you know, they wanted it to, irresponsibly get out. And weirdly, in 2010, the internet controlled itself enough that that never actually happened. And we made it to like midnight and nobody, you know. Was that when the major thing eventually came out, though?
That was part of it, I think, yeah.
Was it? Okay.
I don't think that was like the main stuff.
It wasn't. Though. Eventually, that's the only thing that.
Yeah, really it was like, out. Oh, that's it? You know, after all the rumors and stuff.
Yeah, it was crazy. So this Washington story, it's been built up now to such a point that it makes me wonder how bad it could possibly, like, you know, now the expectations are, it's like that time that I hyped up a quarterback prospect and was like, you guys are going to be so excited, ... And then when I reported the news, everybody was like, that's not fucking exciting. And I'll pay for that fine because it warranted the use of it. Jason, Dustin, who wants to go?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I don't have anything too exciting, but I did update the recruiting board, so I encourage everybody to take a look at that. Gunnar Helm, the tight end out of Colorado, I've reported on him a bunch on the board and on the website. I'm hoping to connect with him today. We've been playing text tag, if you will, the last couple of days, but he's going to be in Austin for obviously an unofficial visit. Coaches can't even be involved, but that's big. He visited Iowa a couple weeks ago, and, you know, I've said – really, since Texas offered and I first talked to him, I thought Texas had a really good chance there. I think, you know, getting him down in Austin for a visit on his own dime obviously backs up that he's pretty interested there. So I'll be tracking that on Monday. I think he's coming in Sunday, Monday. So I hope to talk to him today to have a preview of that visit in the war room. And then beyond that, man, just still struggling with the school situation with the kids. We don't know what we're going to do. Curious to hear what everybody else decides. And I think I'm going to completely unplug maybe this last week of July before maybe football starts. So all these board complaints I get that are eating up an hour and a half of my morning every morning, start funneling those to the other Orange Bloods guys, because I think I'm going to unplug for a week and maybe take my kids to the beach or something before school may or may not start. So, just looking forward to that if it comes to fruition. But I'm thinking maybe that last week of July if that doesn't conflict with anybody else.
Yeah, there's no way in hell I'm reading those reports.
I'll come back to like just, 500 yeah, no. of them.
You'll come back and you just need to delete them.
But the problem is, dude, I mean, you have to delete every one individually. It's a multi-step process. It's a pain in the ass. So
no, it is the bane of your existence as a human being. Sorry about that. Dustin, you got anything?
Yeah, we're kind of weighing the little person version of school decision right now as well, as we try to figure out what to do with our guy. But there is some news in college baseball that came out from Kendall Rogers, I believe yesterday evening, about the D1 Council passing some aid legislation. Basically, they're trying to pass, or they did pass, that you can stack. What that means is just combine need-based financial aid with athletic aid in a way that counts a certain way for college baseball. So normally, depending on how the legislation is written, let's say that you've got a student, a young man, and he comes from a family and they qualify at their respective university for a bunch of financial aid. Need-based aid is what they call it. If they were to accept that aid, it would then count towards that program's 11.7 athletic scholarships, even though it wasn't an athletic scholarship. Because basically most of these universities allocate the equivalent of 11.7. They're like, you're going to use it one way or another, and that's how we're going to count it. So the NCAA D1 Council passed this because they want to try to increase the amount of scholarships that are in college baseball. I'm still kind of digging around on what this means for Texas and some of those other big programs, but I think
this is again going to give private schools more access to financial aid than it will public schools. But generally speaking, this is a good thing for college baseball. It's a step in the right direction in terms of trying to expand and get access to more financial aid for more players. I mean, because let's be honest, baseball, one of its difficulties right now with young people is it's an expensive sport to play if you're going to do the travel circuit type thing. And with these programs only having 11.7 scholarships, and granted some of these private schools operate where they have basically double of that, but most of these programs only having 11.7 scholarships, you're not getting full rides to any of these programs. You're lucky. You're very fortunate if you're even getting a half situation. So this is going to be some news to follow. I think quietly college baseball during this pandemic has tried to push forward some really interesting legislation that could lead to more eyeballs on the sport, more money coming in for the sport, and also more scholarships for those student athletes. So just something to follow as we hopefully get into a fall to where we can kind of have some exhibition games and things like that.
My final parting shot, it was something that I said earlier this week. We didn't really dive in at all into this podcast, into the announcement from the university earlier this week about renaming the field from the Joe Jamel Field to the Earl Campbell Ricky Williams Field. They had the school announced a number of initiatives, from investment of money to the changing of buildings and fields and statues. And I just want to emphasize that this is one of the rare situations in life that I think history will remember everybody involved as a winner, right? I think the school and the university was able this week to look proactive, and we can quibble with whether or not it was forced and it took this crazy year of discontent to push this ambitious set of agenda making through, but like, it got through. And the University of Texas, it's weird, but it will feel a little bit different with the presence of new monuments and new dedications, and it will be noticed. You know, I think people lose sight of the fact that 25 years ago, the University of Texas had a hard time recruiting inner city kids in the state of Texas. It really had been the downfall of the program from the mid 80s into the mid 90s. And then John Makovic showed up and changed it a little bit, but really it was Mack Brown that came in that made it okay for kids in Dallas and inside of the city of Houston to not go to Texas A&M anymore, to go to Texas. Like, that was a thing 25 years ago, and like, memories die hard. So I think this was a good week for Texas, the institution. Nothing that it did was bad. Like, it was all good stuff. And kudos to the players. They get to emerge as winners. That this group of players will, regardless of whether or not they ever win or play in another game, they'll be remembered as an agent of change for good. And in the end, the only people that are going to remember how the sausage was made is a really small number of people on the internet that get a little too worked up sometimes about issues and probably need to pause a little bit and go, hey, am I getting too overworked up about this? Because in the end, no nuclear buttons were pushed. Nothing truly crazy occurred. There was a demand, a request for change. It was met. There weren't really any fireworks beyond that. And everybody involved actually gets to feel happy that they've done something positive. And so I'm just saying that in 25 years, nobody's going to remember how in 2020 all of these things happened. They'll be mere footnotes. What will be remembered is that the changes occurred and that the players on the football program had an active role in creating that change. It's a positive legacy for everybody involved. I think everybody should think of it like that. You can overthink this, and you can nitpick it, and you can turn it into a political thing, but in reality, some good stuff happened this week that is very positive, reflecting on the program, on the school, on the players, on the new university president. It is a rare situation where something turns into win-win for basically everybody involved. Special shout out to the Joe Jamel family, because it, from my vantage point, that could not have been easy to just to like jump on board with, let alone to apparently be the initiative and the creator of, we'll give up our dad's name being on the field so that we can dedicate it to Ricky Williams and Earl Campbell. Like, that's a cool thing. Kudos.
I'll bet you the statue stays up. I'll bet you the statue stays up.
As it should. Like, Joe Jamel has, even in his death, still is doing more for the University of Texas than most people do in their lives. And like,
did you see Bomani Jones' tweet about him, Ketch? He said he still remembers back in 1997. Joe Jamel asked the administration after that 66-3 loss to UCLA or whatever, how much it was going to cost to take his name off the field.
Look, Joe Jamel is one of those guys that deserves to be remembered, and he will. And weirdly, I'd never felt like the field more deserved to be named after Joe Jamel than I did in the moment that he took his name off the field. It always weirdly bothered me that Memorial Stadium became, you know, for those, because now Darryl Royal's name's on the stadium as well, and I think most people call it DKR. But it was Memorial Stadium, and when all of the naming things first changed, like, it used to give me a little bit of a personal ick that Joe Jamel had the field named after him and a stadium that was dedicated to the memory of lost soldiers, lost servicemen. So I don't know. Like, it was, again, shout out to the Jamel family. It could not have been easy, no matter what they say. And they made a situation that could have been really difficult one to celebrate. And I think Joe Jamel would have liked that. For myself, for Alex, for Anwar, for Dustin, and Jason, good podcast this week. Somehow we keep pulling it off, even though we sure would love some football to talk about. Until next week, you guys take care of yourselves. Be good to each other. Later.